Welcome to the show. Today, my friend Lauren B. Deere joins to talk about her mental health, having bipolar disorder, as well as her art. She is an artist, as well as a damn fine poetry writer, and you'll find that out in the middle of this podcast. Thank you to Gamban and Epic for sponsoring this episode of the show. Enjoy. Hello and welcome to All In the Addicted Gamblers Podcast. My name is Brian and I have not placed a bet since July of 2014. And with me today is my friend Lauren. Lauren and I met while we were both inpatient in a mental health hospital near where I live. Lauren, welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
Lauren, would you start by just telling everybody a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I am an artist and I also have bipolar disorder. Also PTSD. So that's really fun. Not really.
Not really.
Yeah, I talk about my disorder and my trauma in my art a lot. I find that it is really helpful for me to process my own stuff, but also it helps to just get it outside of my body so that I don't have to hide it anymore.
And so when I met you, what took you to the hospital this time? And I say this time because you said there were other hospitalizations previous.
Yeah, this was my fourth hospitalization. This time it was for depression. I was very unhappy with my work, my day job, and kind of felt like I had lost my sense of purpose. So it got pretty bad, and I'm not going to go into detail about that, but I said, I'm not going to let it get any worse. So I checked into the hospital, and yeah, that's how I met you.
Yeah. You arrived in my, I guess, my second week, or you, towards the end of my first week, I guess you arrived. And thank God you did, because it made it a lot easier having a friend in there. And I think it took us a few days to start talking, but we...
I think we initially bonded over Dazed and Confused, actually.
I was reading that book.
Yes.
And you expressed interest in it. And then I left you the book.
Yes, I still have it.
That was really cool. Yeah. I was like, that was so exciting for me to have finished a book because I never read books. But in there, it felt like a good opportunity. So my wife brought me that book. And it was so cool. It's the behind the scenes of the entire movie of Dazed and Confused from conception to the end results and the aftermath. And it was just, it was exactly what I needed to get me through the situation. And you were like, hey, what's that? And I was so happy that somebody else wanted to talk about Dazed and Confused.
It's a great film. Definitely love it.
Lauren, what is bipolar disorder?
So there's two types of bipolar disorder. I think it's type two. It's when you experience very high elevated moods that can sometimes go into psychosis. You also experience deep depressions. I have type one, which is experiencing both of those extremes. Type two is when you only experience, not only as in it's less than, but you experience hypomania and then deep, deep, deep depressions as well. So you don't necessarily go full on mania with number two.
When you say mania, what would that look like?
Oh gosh, asking the hard questions here, Brian.
Sorry, I started early.
So mania is, for me, it's I'm not myself. I will most certainly go into psychosis when it gets bad. I won't eat or sleep for days on end. Just real decline in like self-care, but also like paranoid thinking, really intense, like fast thoughts. So like my mouth won't be able to keep up with my mind.
Okay.
And then it can be like, I can be a danger to myself and others. It's not good.
And so that's when a hospitalization would come into play?
Yes.
How did you come to the hospitalization? Was that under your own doing or were you brought to the hospital? I was brought to the hospital. I myself went in to the police station and then the police took me to the hospital because I showed up at the police station with a shotgun in my minivan that I was not in. It sounds weird when I say it like that. I didn't show up to the police station with the shotgun. It was in my minivan and I said, please remove this from my possession. I am thinking about harming myself. And then they sent me to the hospital. So it wasn't my choice to go, but it was their protocol. Did you have a similar, not similar to the shotgun, but was it your own doing or did somebody else take you?
So this time around, it was my own doing because with depression, it's a little easier for me to realize, hey, I'm depressed right now. I realized that I needed to seek help. For my past hospitalizations that were for mania, two of them were involuntary, meaning that the police had to come to my house and escort me out of my room. Yeah, really, it's traumatic sometimes.
Yeah. On a side note, not a side note because you said you're an artist, but I was surprised when we were in there how many artistic and creative people were in the hospital with us.
Yes.
And we won't give away any names or anything of the sort, but was it like that when you had been in there before with that group? I found the group that I was in with, I got very lucky. It was a special group of people and I connected with a lot of different individuals in there, yourself being one. And it made it so much easier for me being at this lowest point that I'm at to be able to connect with others. And I don't know if it was sort of like what you, my daughter's screaming from the other room. I don't know if it was like what you had said earlier in the car, which was all the superficialness is stripped away and you get to see the actual human being. And if you connect with that person, that means you're set. Then you're going to be buddies for life. So
I didn't always feel that way. This time around, I certainly did, and I know that the connections that I made in there are connections for life. But I didn't always allow myself to form those deep connections because I think I placed a lot of shame on the experience of being an inpatient. So I wanted to forget being there. I wanted to forget the people that I met there. So when I would be on the outside, as you like to call it, I wouldn't stay in touch with them as I do now.
Yeah.
And I'm sure I met amazing people. I just don't, like, sometimes I'll remember them, but I have no idea where they are now, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there were people in there that I spoke with and I really had a good time talking to, but I'm currently not, I don't talk to them. And it's not that I'm avoiding them, but it just, you know, neither one of us is making an effort, which people go back to their lives. And so I don't think it's anything personal one way or another. I just think people go back to their lives. What do you think of the overall setup of the system that we were in as far as could they make that experience any better than it is? Or do you think, well, kind of is what it is and it's fine for what it is because you're not meant to stay there forever?
So it's actually really interesting. This past experience in the hospital that I had, in comparison to the other hospitalizations, because this time around, they let us have our phones.
Oh, that's not a thing?
The other times we weren't allowed to have phones. Are you kidding? No way.
Well, we could have our phones after, I think, 5 o'clock in the evening.
Yeah, they did not let us have phones at all. So when I came in this time around, I wrote down all the phone numbers that I needed, thinking that I wasn't going to be allowed to have my cell phone. Mm-hmm. So the fact that they gave us something that we're on constantly, like something that is like so completely tied to our lives, it felt like I had way more freedom and like I wasn't a prisoner.
Yeah.
So that really allowed me to focus more on my mental health.
Yeah.
That being said, there are certainly things that I would continue to change and root and vote for and shit, whatever. But
I enjoyed it. It felt like camp. Because you're all in the same area with each other all day long. You can go back to your room, but generally you're going to have a roommate or two or three. But all in all, we're just all across the hall from each other, and we all go to the lobby every day, or the, what was that room called?
The day room.
The day room. We would all gather in the day room, or people would stay in bed, and it felt very like camp to me. By day four, I was kind of like, all right, I see what's going on here. Cool. Yeah, let me go to group, and it took me forever to get used to group therapy. I love it now. And
group therapy is excellent.
You and I are both involved in outside of that place group therapy. In there, it was so hard to get used to group therapy because I'm not a commenter on other people. And all of a sudden, I would hear a mutual friend of ours comment on other people. I was like, wow, she's really good at this group thing. I don't have anything to say. All I could think about was myself in those situations. And I was like, I don't want to say anything. But then as I get more comfortable, you start to kind of break free of that.
And the thing about that is, even if you can only relate to your own experience, other people will relate to that experience.
Yeah.
So it's just about sharing and being open, which is really hard to do sometimes.
Yeah. How did you find group therapy? Did you enjoy it more this time compared to others? Do you have the same experience with group? Are you a good group therapy, not teammate?
Attendee?
Yeah. Because you ditched out on a few that I was in.
Yeah, it depends.
You were like, I'm going to go.
It really depends on the group. It depends on who's in the group and who's running it and what the topic is.
Okay.
There are some forms of therapy that just don't work for me. Mm-hmm. I've just learned that. And that's okay. Like, to each their own. And same for, like, clinicians or, like, other people that you just don't gel with. Sometimes I feel like I will try and sit through it to see if, like, maybe, you know, I'm judging this too harshly. Maybe something, I'll get something out of it, something unexpected. But other times I just know right off the bat, nope, this is not going to work for me.
As far as the groups that do work for you, what kind of topics do you like?
I like CBT skills. Mm-hmm.
Can you explain what that is?
Oh, goodness.
Cognitive behavioral therapy. I asked you because I went, crap, what does that stand for? And then it clicked.
Basically, I'm going to do a terrible job of defining this, but...
That's okay. We don't teach it.
It's skills to help you change the direction of your thoughts. And the structure of it is that your thoughts influence your behaviors, which influence your actions. So if you can change your thoughts, you're going to change your actions.
Okay. That was a very good explanation.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it's really good. I enjoy it. The other therapies that I enjoy or like different like topics, boundary setting, that's a big one for me because in the past and currently I haven't been great at like knowing how to hold firm boundaries for myself. Interpersonal relationships, that's another one. Goal setting, stress management. I mean, I could go on.
I am shit at goal setting. I am terrible at goal setting. That's something that I even the other day it came up in my other group and I was like, nope, I'm bad at this part. I'm like, well, we have to work to get better. And I'm like, yeah, but I'm bad at it. In fact, the sheet I was filling out was like, what are your goals to fix what you're bad at? And I was like, well, what I'm bad at is setting goals. How am I going to, down the rabbit hole.
Find the motivation, I guess, somehow. I mean, also it's like, For me anyway, like with setting goals and following through with goals, that's a big one for me that I have trouble with. Doing small things every day in the interest of that.
Taking, as somebody recently put to me, taking a small bite of the whale so you can eat the whole whale eventually. But you just take small bites at a time and eventually you'll eat the whole whale. I don't know why people want to use that metaphor, but they do. And it's stuck with me, so it must be working. How has your art and having a creative side to you helped ease any mental health struggles you've had?
So I released a spoken word poetry album during the pandemic.
It's not every day I get to sit in my basement with somebody who's released a spoken word album or an album or done spoken words. That's mightily impressive.
Cool. It was a big deal for me because I talked about my bipolar disorder for pretty much the first time publicly through my art. And then also about like my trauma. And it was a way for me to let go of a lot of anger and a lot of hurt surrounding those things in my life. And, you know, I hope that other people find it useful too or relatable in some way.
What was your favorite game to play on the inside during free time?
Rummy.
I guess I was setting you up for that. We played Rummy. I don't know how many games we played, but at first I was like, what is this game? And then after I got into it, it was a lot of fun. I mean, anything to distract yourself from where you are. I felt like it was a lot of waiting around in there. You're just like waiting for the next group or waiting for the next meal or waiting for a visitor or waiting to go to bed.
Yes.
It's just a lot of sitting around and waiting, and they only let you out twice a day into the cage, into the, it's a cage. It's absolutely a cage.
I've never heard it referred to as such, but it really is a cage.
It is a rusted fence.
It's not barbed wire. What is it? It's not like chain link.
It's chain link, yeah. But it's all rusted. And so it looks more cage-like, I think, because it's rusted.
Someone, I actually wrote a little bit of it about it in my journal, that someone tried to put flowers out there in pots, and when I was there, they were withered and dead.
Oh, yeah.
And they had not taken good care of them. Or maybe it was just the time of the year. I don't know. But it was nice to think that someone had tried to make it that place more beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. My choice of leisure time activity to relax me was puzzles. And I completed 3 puzzles, one of which being the largest one, that magic puzzle that was, it was cool because it had moving parts to it, which was bizarre for a puzzle. But I've done a puzzle or two with my wife before, but never did I realize that puzzles were relaxing and just, you can just sort of space out.
I had the opposite reaction to puzzles.
Yeah.
They stressed me out.
I kept trying to get
out.
You in. I kept trying to get everybody involved. Like, come help me with the puzzle. Come help me. And people would stop by, put in a few pieces, but then get up and depart. Why did they stress you out?
I think I just look at it and get overwhelmed at all the pieces.
I think for me, it was something about completing something. That's what gave me, like, I just want to complete it. Like, it wasn't so much, I guess, about it, but I had this inside feeling of, I need to complete this puzzle.
So I feel similarly to adult coloring books, filling it all out. And
how many different pages did you color during your time? The coloring section in the day room, like the coloring group, was huge and much bigger than I would have ever thought in my entire life. Like, people were coloring all day, and these intricate little designs that they were coloring different colors in each little box. And
I will say that the recreational therapist that is there is excellent.
Yeah.
In providing.
She gave me my stress ball, and yeah, I am forever grateful for that stress ball because it got me through the last week and a half of just tossing that ball up and down to myself and then squeezing the hell out of it. I loved that stress ball. And then I got home and I got a couple other stress balls, but they weren't the same. They were too stiff. And I was like, this isn't satisfying at all. I was very disappointed by the stress balls I got when I got home. But that one I still have somewhere. My daughter took it when I got home.
Well, it's like, you know, I took up knitting after I came out of here. You know, something,
so
anything
cool
to do with your hands, you know, like, all of these suggestions kind of sound like cliche if you're like super depressed, right? Like, if you need help, go get your help. I feel like coping tools like these, though, if you take the judgment off of it and you're like, well, let me just try it, they can be really helpful.
And I was absolutely somebody who judged that stuff. I was in there rolling my eyes anytime somebody said coping skills or coping mechanisms. I was just like, yeah, yeah, I'm going to breathe my way through it. Little did I know, now when I'm in traffic, I mean, well, stuck in traffic, or somebody cuts me off, or my child is yelling from the back seat, I'm sitting there breathing, and I didn't even realize it.
Can I perform a poem for you and everyone?
Yeah, absolutely. Of course.
I don't mean to cut you off.
No.
You just reminded me of a line.
Please do.
7-Eleven receipts. Overflowing seltzer can ashtrays. Fruit flies on bowls with Captain Crunch milk at the bottom and blinds that stay closed during the day. I am 29 years old, but my depression has never owned a watch. It has the appetite of a 13-year-old boy, the mood swings of a 15-year-old girl, and is lacking a backbone that hasn't grown. Its motor skills remain at 18 months. Peter Pan is my depression's favorite movie. It hopes I never grow up so we can stay in Neverland, but it doesn't believe in fairies. My psychiatrist was a kind, understanding, middle-aged man with a Mark Twain samurai mustache who comments on the weather while cluck, cluck, clucking on a 1997 off-white Windows keyboard. I keep buying new clothes so I don't have to wash the old ones. Online shopping carts make me feel alive, can't tear my eyes away from that blue light. Every Wednesday night, I drive my mother's car to my therapist's office where I tell her I have this kind of hopeless feeling. Then to kill the remainder of our 40-minute session, we pull Estonian flashcards that read in mangled English, breathe in for 7 seconds, hold for 5, then out for 4, and I have nothing else to say. So she's not to blame. My mom always says, are you taking your meds? Are you sure you're taking your meds? Have you taken your meds today? Yes! But wait, did I forget? The other day I cracked open a fortune cookie only to find the inside of it empty. Half a year has gone by without my notice. The time was never mine. No refund, no store credit. It arrived in the spring, succeeding no terrible occurrence. Tipped its hat with a grin as it invited itself in like a traveling salesman with more sinister intentions. Sometimes it takes only what it can carry, and sometimes it robs me clean. One time it tried to take my life, but it always takes my life away from me. This time I was lucky.
That was incredible. I shut my eyes because I didn't want to get distracted while you were performing it. And it was like I was visualizing the whole thing. Wow.
Thank you.
Have you done that in front of people?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that actually felt like the best performance that I've done of it, though. I'm going to be real.
That was incredible. What a thing to witness. Thank you.
Thank you.
Now I get to share that with everybody.
That is the coolest thing ever. Thank you.
How do you write in that tone? How does something, how did you write this exact poem?
I honestly could not tell you. I think I just, well, when I write, it just kind of flies out of me. But sometimes I do have to really practice and put it down. But for this one, like specifically, like there were just instances in my life that were occurring where I was getting so frustrated at being depressed. The psychiatrist that I was going to at the time, that whole thing, I was like, but it's from a judgmental standpoint too, where it's like Mark Twain, samurai mustache, like these things where I, and the keyboard and things that I would notice in hyper detail that I would think, oh, he's a bad psychiatrist. Well, is he? Or am I just being judgmental and not actually trusting his advice and more so just judging him? But it's hard not to be judgmental for me when I'm depressed. So I think that's a part of it too.
When you write that, do you know, you write it from a performance standpoint? Like, you know, it's going to be sort of a spoken word poem. You know where the inflections are going to be as you're writing?
Yes. Yeah. So I'll hear it in my head as I'm writing it, like how it's going to sound.
That was so, I mean, I think back to like, I haven't watched a lot of spoken word poetry or like slam poetry. But as you were doing it, I was like, this sounds exactly like what I've heard. Not, I mean, in a complimentary way of like, yeah, in that tone. And I've never witnessed it in person. I've only, you know, like TV flipping through or something like that, or in a movie when, sure, someone's doing it.
Yeah.
What a thing to witness, Lauren, man. That was awesome.
Thanks.
You did something interesting after you left, which was you quit a habit that you had had for 11 years.
Yes, I quit smoking cigarettes.
Why this time? Why now?
I'm actively trying to change all of the bad habits of my life and all of the bad behaviors. And instead of trying to change all of it at once, very quickly, 100%, I'm trying to change everything at the same time in slow, small ways. Does that make sense?
Yeah. We talk a lot about character defects in gambling recovery. And recovering from a gambling addiction. And I mean, that's exactly what you're trying to do, is fix these defects of character. And everybody likes the term defects of character or character defects, but the behaviors you're trying to change. But it would seem to me from the outside that smoking would be a good coping skill to keep while you change the other behaviors first and then work on smoking last. But you dove headfirst, yeah, into like... Did the opportunity just present itself to quit?
Well,
or was it a conscious choice of I'm quitting?
A little bit of both. I like to say that I accidentally quit smoking because I did not mean to, until the point in time where it was like, wait, okay, yes, I'm going to. Sorry, that was very vague. When I was in inpatient.
On the inside.
They don't let you smoke cigarettes, even though One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest will tell you otherwise. They do not allow it on the unit. So they put me on the patch, and I was in inpatient for 2 weeks. And then when I got out, I was like, first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to buy a pack and I'm going to go get my iced chai latte with a shot of espresso. And I did that and I smoked my cigarette and I said, wow, this tastes like shit. I'm going to keep smoking anyway. So I continued to smoke. And then I was like, you know what? I actually really hate this. I hate the smell of it. My throat is sore. Did I always breathe this heavily and I just never noticed it? Like, what is going on? Like, so then it was like, okay, wasn't planning on doing this, but I'm doing this. Like, I quit. I'm not going to smoke anymore. So
it's a hard thing to do.
It's so hard.
I'm stunned that you did it, but I'm very happy for you that you did it.
Thank you.
I remember you talking about smoking when we were in the hospital.
That's all I wanted to do was smoke a cigarette when I was in there.
And I have to say, if they had let people smoke, if there were smoke breaks, I would have smoked. Not to get the break, but I used to smoke casually, and I would have absolutely, in that circumstance, smoked. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of glad they didn't let people do that.
Well, I took up knitting in its place to keep my hands busy and to keep myself, like, or to cope with the stress, rather.
And has knitting worked in the same capacity?
Certainly not, but I also chew gum and I am on the patch as well, so.
Have you noticed yourself feeling better since you did quit smoking?
That's a really good question. No one's asked me that yet.
Are you saying that people asked you everything else I've asked you so far?
No. No, but it is a question that, it's a good question that should be asked. Hi. There's a dog here and I love
my little three-legged dog loves Lauren.
And I love him. What was the question? I just said it was a really good question.
Have you noticed that you feel better since you quit smoking?
I do, yeah. I'm not huffing and puffing every time I walk up a flight of stairs. You know, whenever I really want a cigarette, I'll go for a walk so that I can get outside and be breathing in a rhythmic, like, more rhythmic way. Yeah, I guess I do feel better. I am a little bit more anxious. Mm-hmm. But I think that comes with the territory of just working on yourself nonstop, like being in group therapy 3 days a week and then seeing your outpatient therapist another day because, hey, who doesn't love therapy, right? Like, let's just load it on.
Yeah. I mean, last week I did 9 hours of group therapy, 1 hour of one-on-one therapy, and then I went to 2 gambling recovery meetings. So I felt like, yeah, I self-cared just the right amount, I think, last week. When I was on my day 4, I quit social media. And I think so. It seems like, why would you do it when you're in there? But I felt like inside the hospital was the best place to do it because we did have our phones. When I would get my phone the first few days, I'm checking social media. And I'm like, what's happening in the world? I got to know. But that's what I realized. Social media upsets me every time I look at it. And not everybody has an unhealthy relationship with it like that. So not everybody needs to do what I did. But I nuked it all on, I think, day 4, and I haven't looked back at all.
How are you feeling?
I feel great.
That's awesome.
About not seeing anything. And now when I do, like, the slightest bit of news and stuff will set me off, and I'm like, God damn, I don't want to know all this crap anymore. I just want to live in a peaceful world. And so I've turned off the TVs from news and stuff like that. But yeah, not being on social media, I thought it would bug me. I thought, like, I would have caved and gone back. But I haven't, and I'm definitely not going back now at this point. I've made it this long. There's no way I'm going back.
Nice.
It felt good to do. I mean, there's, like, certain people on there that I only knew through there that I wish I could get in touch with, but I can't let that keep me from doing what I did. So I also quit something. That wasn't as hard as quitting smoking after 11 years.
But it's still addictive.
Oh, for sure. Oh, absolutely, it was addictive. That's why I had to quit it, because I was addicted in the same way that I've been addicted to other things. So lastly, I wanted to mention that you have tattoos.
Yeah.
And I asked you a lot of questions about your tattoos when we were in the hospital because I'm fascinated. I don't have any tattoos, but I'm fascinated by the idea. I've always wanted to get some, but I've never known what to get. And I always was like, oh, I'm going to get muscular and then I'll get tattoos. And then after the hospital visit, I felt like, you know what? If I want tattoos, I'm going to go get some damn tattoos.
Yeah.
What do your tattoos do for you? What do they mean to you? Why do you get them? Could you just talk a little bit about that? Because you're an artistic person. You're a right-brained individual. You can talk about that.
Two of my tattoos are very meaningful to my mental health and being an inpatient and outpatient. At the end of outpatient, they give you a stone with a word on it. And so the first time I was in outpatient, they gave me a stone that said inspire. And I said, huh, that's awesome. I love that word. Cool. And then the second time that I was in outpatient, they gave me the word create. And so I said, okay, like that just completes the cycle of what I want for myself, what I want to do, what I want to be. So I got them tattooed the words on my arm. So inspire on one arm and create on the other. So it's like I'm doing a little dance right now that you guys can't see, but it works. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Do you have any future tattoos planned?
I'm percolating, but I don't know yet.
Kicking around some stuff.
Yeah.
Well, Lauren, I can't thank you enough for doing this and especially sharing about your mental health, because it helps other people when they hear what people are going through. And you like inspired me. So thank you so much. And that poem was beautiful.
Thank you.
And you should be on top of the world for the way you just performed that. It was incredible.
Thank you.
For anybody who did get to see it, but you got to hear it, and I'm sure hearing it will make you feel it.
Can I do a shameless plug of my
album? Of course.
If you want to listen to my album, you can look me up on Spotify or iTunes. It's Lauren B. Deer. That's B-E-D-E-A-R.
Definitely, and I can link it in the description of the show.
Sounds good.
Well, Lauren, thank you so much, and thanks everybody for listening.
Thank you.
This podcast is owned by Lee Street Media, LLC. Music provided by T Vance. Remember, this is a podcast. The views expressed on the podcast are solely those of the hosts and the guests. If you need help for a gambling addiction, please seek professional help.